And welcome back to Deep Thinking with Michael Gugis and Ed Sorbo, the podcast about motorcycle, road racing, and all things included.
Number five.
This is episode number five. We haven't been shut down yet. It's great.
They can't find our secret location.
They can't find our secret compound. I just want it to be
on
like
on top
them.
Of Old Horror Hill in a secret laboratory. Professor Weirdo and Count Kook were in their monstrous glory. I'm the professor. He's the count.
All I ever wanted was a bat cave. You know?
Who doesn't want a bat cave?
It's so totally badass.
The U.S. Navy
dude.
Had a bat cave. They had a submarine that had a hangar
right.
on it for something. I forget what. And they converted it into a place to put all the spying equipment when they were doing electronic gathering, and the guys called it the bat cave.
You know, that's pretty cool, but it's not as cool as being able like to barrel down your street and then have the road closed sign just fall over when you get close and barrel on in.
Would you settle for a utility belt?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay.
That thing was badass, dude. He had everything on there. That was better than Felix's magic bag of tricks.
See,
and that thing was pretty cool, too.
See, this is like Batman, right?
Right.
Because everybody can have a utility belt.
Absolutely.
Gadgets. You know, women, all you have to do is name your children Gotham. And then when the kid wakes up in the middle of the night and starts crying, you just roll over and whisper to your husband, Gotham needs you.
He's out of bed.
And all your problems will be solved.
He's awake. His eyes are wide open. Dude, there was nothing about Batman that a man wouldn't like.
Hey,
a car with a huge amount of horsepower and flames coming out of the back.
Yeah.
It's all I wanted out of life.
Yeah, right. But, you know, he didn't have... Never mind. We won't talk about his sidekick.
Okay. Yeah.
So what's our topic for today?
We got a letter.
And we did.
We want an email from Rick Crespo.
Oh, okay.
And we're really proud of Rick because he was smart enough to figure out how to contact us.
It's
you know?
A secret. We're not going to tell you how to do it. If you want to send us questions, thoughts, or ideas, you've got to figure out how
and you
on your own.
You can figure it out. You know, so Rick
well,
don't.
Rick did.
You know,
so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, don't break your arm patting yourself on the back, dude. But still, we're proud of you. Anyway, Rick writes in and he says, with this new Moto America organization and the introduction of KTM, we're talking about the RC 390 Cup.
Yes.
Do you think we will get our racers back to the Nicky Hayden and Ben Spies quality, or were they just the best examples that we had and will have for some time? Were they an anomaly? So the question really is, you know, let's talk about Americans in world and international level road racing. We used to rule that joint. That was an American joint, yo. And now we got, you know, very, very, very little representation, unfortunately, at that level.
You know, that's a classic example of America is always drawn in the middle of the map. We used to rule that joint.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Well, we managed to win the big class a few times.
No, right? It was a lot.
But the majority of the people involved in world-level racing are
right.
not Americans.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because it's not just the guy who's riding the motorcycle.
Right.
It's the crew chief and the guy driving the truck and all the people doing all the work.
Right, right.
So it's still predominantly a European activity.
And, it's always been,
because it's based there and all that stuff, it's hard to travel.
Because even though the factories are Japanese, it's still Eurocentric, you know?
Because most of the race is there. What are you going to do, right? You got to be where the racing is going on. That's one of the things that make national level and world level racing exponentially harder than club racing is traveling and doing it in a different place.
I want to digress on something.
Okay.
Because we're 349 into it.
We have a digression license.
Ready to digress. You know, sometimes I read stuff on the web and it's like, okay, these people don't grasp what's going on. If they spent 2 seconds thinking about what they were writing. We used to always read that one of the reasons that support classes wouldn't come to Laguna Seca was because the paddock wasn't big enough. And yet, they would say, okay, we're going to have American support classes with just as many people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and of course, the real answer was the sanction fee.
Yep.
You could pay to bring the big class over and you know. So here's the one that I saw recently that cracked me up. The engine limits in MotoGP, you only get to use five engines now. Part of the reason that that's saving a ton of money is that it saves on the cost of rebuilds and shipping the engine back to Japan for a rebuild. Ed.
That's some bullshit. You know, a long time ago, in contingency racing ruled, and the Bias-Ply High Sports from Michelin,
right,
were the dominant, right? They were the first DOT tire that was like a race rubber, right?
Okay.
And you could get them in various sizes.
Okay.
And so the correct size for a 500 Interceptor was the 130 rear. And you could squeeze the 140 on there, but it's too big and it wraps around.
Right.
And the handle's funny. You don't use all the rubber. So some guy wins a 500 Interceptor Cup race somewhere, and he tells in the interview that it was because he ran the 140 rear tire. Okay, well, that's a bunch of bullshit. That 140 tire made the bike slower. So what he was really doing was disinformation, right? There was some kind of cheat going on that bike in the engine or I don't know what, right? And he was redirecting you to look at this tire and go, oh, I got to get that tire. So this is
awesome.
Exactly the example you just gave. There's a real reason behind it, and your job is to puzzle out what the reason.
Well, I mean, but the
look at that, you can't even speak anymore.
It doesn't take a lot of puzzling to figure out that maybe Honda can afford to ship as many MotoGP engines back and forth from Europe to
Japan.
It's
not the cost of the shipping.
That was hysterical.
You know, my hero, Neil deGrasse Tyson, loves to talk about the importance of developing critical thinking in your kids. It's a B. They're important. They won't bite you.
I didn't squish it.
You're scared of them.
I am terrified of them. They
and
bite
so
on both
you
ends.
Need to practice critical thinking when
right.
you're reading press releases. It's the first thing you do is you read it. It's a press release. Okay, I don't believe anything.
Exactly.
Anyway, well, let's try to talk about American talent.
Nikki's incredibly talented. By no means are we crapping on Nikki Hayden, but Nikki hasn't won a race in a while. Okay, PJ Jacobson, really good. World Supersport. What do we need to get a guy like him up to World Superbike?
Okay, so the difference between the Americans back in the day, the first ones, Kenny Roberts, Freddie Spencer, those guys, and coming over to Europe and dominating, was that the Americans were racing flat track, and they learned all this drifting control that was then applicable at the world level, where it had not been applicable a few years before when you were racing on fucking streets.
Right.
Over railroad tracks and shit. Nobody could ride at those kind of limits.
Yeah, nobody was going sideways.
And,
nobody was drifting
in the
rear.
And the bikes were made an exponential improvement, right? You used to not be able to hang off a bike. If you hung off, it wiggled so bad, you had to be part of the frame in the old school way of riding. And you had to stay steady.
You were a mass damper on that machine.
Exactly.
You were part of the rigidity.
You know, now when you make a silly movement on your bike and it causes the bike to twitch or whatever, think about that multiplied by tenfold.
Okay.
That's what those guys were on. So a lot of things happened, one of which was Americans were able to go, right? Before that, it was just too hard to get there.
Right.
On any scale. And they had this different riding background. Well, now everybody rides flat track, right? Those guys are like, hey, look at that guy kicking my ass. He's been riding flat track. Look at him sliding around. I can't do that. I think I'll ride flat track. These guys aren't dumb, right? And the other difference, too, was Roberts was one of the first guys to bring, you know, training and seriousness to his riding. He was beating – Barry Sheen was a king party guy.
Right.
Right? And so that change alone is going to make you be
exactly.
more –
Exactly. A lot of them were just partying because they, man, it was a really good chance. You weren't going home Sunday night.
So, in a way, our guys leapfrogged ahead of the average at the time, and then the average now has caught up. And when you're in a country where, I don't know if it's the majority, but a huge amount more of the kids in Spain are going to go down the road of motorsports or soccer than – or sorry, football, then in America, the kids are going to go, most of them are going to go down the stick and ball game sport in a very small number, right? So if you got 500 guys who trying to do thing and against 10 guys, the odds are that the winners are going to come from the group of 500.
You're going to find more talent in a group of 500 than you're going to find in a group of 10.
Yeah, and then, of course, the other difference, and you know, when Nicky was coming up and his brothers, there was a huge amount more grassroots racing, right? That
was
the peak
more grassroots
of
racing.
The big economy as far as racing goes. 80s and the 90s, I mean, bikes were cheap and they were out there like crazy and a lot of places you could go, and it wasn't diluted. People who weren't totally serious about racing couldn't go to track days. If you wanted to be on the track, you had to. So there was more people doing it. I think track days are a good thing. I think people that don't want to race shouldn't have to be on the track with people who want to race. You know, so there's a lot of things that are different, and it would be interesting to look at the percentages. So Nicky was part of a group of Americans who went off and did well in the European level, and he right. was what percentage of the American pool? And then compared to the Americans now, and what percentage are they? And the other thing that's different is that now we have four aliens.
Right.
It used to be that you had one alien, right?
Okay.
McDoohan.
Right.
Right. For a long time, you're like, oh, who's going to win the race? Oh, McDoohan.
McDoohan.
Who's
right.
going to win the race next year? Oh, this chap named McDoohan. You know, right?
right.
And don't take away from the guy who's kicking everybody ass.
Right.
Be mad at the guys who can't keep up with that dude.
Right.
And so we had Eddie Lawson. Then we had Wayne Rady.
Right.
Then we had McDoohan. You know, there was a series of guys like that. And
right.
then along came Rossi. And finally, other people started going, hey, we got to get with the Rossi plan.
Yeah.
What's he doing?
What is he doing?
You know?
Right. Well, I think, and you know, if you look at all of those guys, Rossi, Marquez, Lorenzo, it's fun to look on YouTube and look at the videos of those guys. They were barely bigger than embryos.
And that's a great point. So these kids, now adults, all started out as kids. And
right.
Okay?
And they were road racing as kids.
And we hear about them, and it's fantastic. But let's not forget that Nicky and Tommy
and Roger
and Roger's parents
right.
mortgaged the house.
Yes.
The roof used to leak.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Nicky talked about that on the podium at Laguna when he won his first race. Okay? That is not a wise investment.
No, that's not.
To make.
Exactly.
It worked for them. And it was great for them, and I'm happy for them.
That's not
but
a development path.
The
right.
vast majority of families who did this
right.
are sorry they did.
Yeah, they just
it's
go, they're
not
broke.
Worth it. They're, and the other members of the family, the other kids, don't get to do whatever their
right.
dream was because you spent all the money on one kid's dream, which was really your dream, and you were trying to live it through your kid. So we want to take a step back and be intelligent about this. I get this question a lot. I've had a fair amount of involvement coaching younger riders, and mm-hmm. what I tell the parents is, look, you're not trying to grow a Nicky Hayden or Roger Lee or a Rossi.
Right.
If that kid is going to be the next Rossi, you can't prevent it. Okay?
I love it.
But
okay.
what you're trying to grow is a good human being.
Right.
And if you choose racing as the way to do that, it's a fantastic tool for it. But whatever activity your kid is interested in,
mm-hmm.
get them the best safety gear you can and
right.
encourage them to do it, especially if your kid is a girl. There is a recent survey that showed that girls who were involved in collegiate sports, so sports while they're in school,
mm-hmm.
are some vast amount less likely to get raped or abused in any other way, and the presumed reason is self-confidence, right? They've got self-confidence because they participate, they know what they can do, and they tell that guy to fuck off before it's too late.
They've learned that they're not helpless.
Exactly.
You know?
And so, wonderful. We love motorcycle racing. But you can get killed doing it.
Right.
You can get maimed doing it. You can get huge bills. You can mess up your family life. You know, all kinds of things. Think about this carefully before you pursue it.
Now
what?
You choose to pursue it.
If you choose to pursue it. So why do they have all these aliens coming out of Spain? Do you think that somebody behind the curtain manipulated and formed a series of progressions of stepping stones for people to get from the bottom rung to the top?
Well, you've got, okay, let's start with Repsol.
Well, so that's what they have.
Yeah, they
but
do.
My point is, how did that come about?
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Let's start with Repsol. You've got a big company that is invested heavily in motorcycle road racing. And it's interesting because they're not a manufacturer. They can take a broader view of it. They love bikes. They want to see Spanish riders. They want to see the country represented well on the world level. So they invest, you know?
Why do they invest?
Oh, because it works better when those kids do get to the world level. They'll back 100 kids.
They invest because they see revenue
from
advertising.
At the world level, absolutely. There's a reason that they're on the side
of So what does Repsol do?
They help with the kids.
No. What does the company do?
Oh, they make lubricants.
Lubricants. They're an oil company.
Exactly.
Right? And so they want to sell
their oil.
I think they sell gas too, don't they?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, whatever.
To be honest,
but they want to sell all these products.
Right.
And because motorcycle racing is important in that country,
right.
it's an avenue to advertise. If
Absolutely.
They were in America, they would advertise through football teams.
Right.
Okay. So the reason that Repsol, the company, is doing it, because it is beneficial to the company.
Right.
But why does the system work? How did the system get in place? I argue that the system happened at the grassroots level because it happened naturally. No one had a scheme. There isn't some guy in Spain who went, I'm going to turn Spain into the magic place for motorcycle racing. What happened is some guy who was into motorcycle riding had kids. That kind of tends to happen when he meets some hot chick at the racetrack, right? That's why hot chicks go to racetracks, right? To meet us.
Yeah, okay. Oh, God. Really?
And
is that how this is supposed to happen?
So now this guy's older, and he can't race as much as he used to, and he's got this kid, and he wants his kid to do what he enjoyed. And so he didn't have a place. There was no way for the kid to do it. So he went to the local go-kart track and started a mini bike club.
Come back to go-karts in a second. Don't forget that countries like Spain and Italy, this is my theory, the countries that lost World War II are overrepresented in terms of the popularity of motorcycle road racing in their countries. Spain got the living crap knocked out of it prior to World War II. We bombed Italy back into the Stone Age. England took a beating. Germany took a beating. Japan took a beating. All of those countries were so poor after the war that they needed dirt cheap transportation, and they turned to two wheels, and they have developed a two-wheel based culture. Spain, we tend to forget, but Spain used to have a lot of motorcycle manufacturers. Bull Taco, ASA, they had indigenous manufacturers who were trying to sell a whole bunch of bikes, not around the world, but to the kid down the street. That one of the ways of getting that kid down the street to buy out of the back of your little factory is by winning at the local level. So that we need that, and that's something we don't have in the United States.
No question, the destroyed economy of many countries after World War II was a part in motorcycle manufacturing growing. But also the size of the place.
Mm-hmm.
So Japan, it's smaller.
Relatively small.
If you go to Hawaii, you'll see like a little American version of Japan. Like lots of scooters, lots of small distance vehicles all over the place because they work there. They work in Japan.
Right.
And Europe, all the European countries are much smaller in scale than what we think of here as in America.
Right.
And so the distances traveled are more appropriate too. But there are other factors that mitigate against motorcycle riding, like the weather in most of these places. You're not riding your motorcycle in winter in Germany, my friend.
No,
matter how good it is.
No.
So I agree that there's definitely the culture is the key thing there. There's a culture of motorcycle racing. But my point is simply that there is a grassroots way of progressing up the scale with your age and your skill level in those countries. It was not planned. It happened out of the culture. And if you go back to the 80s and 90s in America, it was easy for the Haydens to take their kids wheel racing. You went with the same group of people wherever you were in the country, in the same classes, and you could work your way up the scale. And nobody looked too carefully at your birth certificate because they were all in on the same plan.
So how do we establish that here?
We fix the economy, stupid.
Well, that helps.
Yeah.
But
that is it all.
Really?
But yeah, you can't, if you don't have the economy that allows it, then you can't have it. And then when the economy is growing, which, by the way, it's growing
rapidly.
I mean, I can see it in my business. I can see it in other people's business. All the people that I know and talk to regularly have told me their businesses are growing also. The next factor, once it's growing again, or it is growing, is going to be we need less expensive racing bikes. The trend has to go the other way.
And that's why I want to introduce my new motorcycle manufacturing company. It's going to be all... Oh, you're right.
The term MG has already been used for little car. You'll have to come up with something else.
Or who owns that copyright?
I don't know.
It's the
British. But I think the tie line should be whatever your company is, we make knickers fall down.
Yep.
Sell lots of motorcycles that way.
That's Porsche. That's Porsche's subcontext. No, mini road racing. I really think we need to emphasize that more. And I think we need to sell that to the manufacturers too. They have a difficult, they have no problem selling little motocross bikes. Have you seen how much a little motocross bike costs? That's insane.
I agree that you need a small entry-level thing.
Right.
But the idea of emphasizing it doesn't work that way.
Why
the
not?
Manufacturer of the motorcycle is just like Repsol in Spain.
Right.
Their purpose is to sell motorcycles.
Right.
Right. So where the market is, they will follow, okay?
Okay.
I say the way the market happened in Spain and the other countries like it are that there were people there, there was the culture, they wanted it, they made it, okay? Until the culture of America moves more towards motorcycling, which it's probably never going to do. It's definitely never going to do it on the European scale. It's just not going
to
happen.
So you're saying there's no opportunity for somebody to come up with a small scale, small production, small displacement road racing bike, limited to 90 miles an hour, perfectly appropriate to use on regular racetracks and on kart tracks. You're saying there's no market for that.
Okay, so here's the beauty of being in America, right? We have all these disadvantages because we're not in Europe.
Right.
The beauty of being in America is there's no limit to what you can do. You can make the class, the structure, the club, the racetrack, all of that stuff, and the bikes, that your heart's desire, anything you want.
Right.
And then if 10 of your friends will join you, you've got a club.
You've got a club.
And then it starts to grow. Look, in the last year and a half, just in our neighborhood, I think the number of mini bike racing clubs at go-karts track has doubled.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. And those guys are going there like bonkers. And guess what? Their tires last all season. they can crash. My team did the 24-hour, I was part of the team, rather, Exhausted Racers, that we won a few years ago at Willow. One rider on our team crashed six times. I think we had a total in the area of 10 crashes. None of them by me. We won the race, right? Because there was no damage to the bike in any of those crashes. The bike picked up and just kept on going. You didn't even have to come into tech and get re-teched. You could just keep going.
Oh, God.
Right? So there's billion reasons why you can do this stuff on a way, way cheaper scale.
Will we see another Ben Spies or Nicky Hayden without a solid foundation of mini road racing and a progression in the United States?
No, absolutely. Those people exist. If your kid's going to be Rossi, you can't prevent it. So those guys are out in the world right now racing, doing their thing. You just don't know who they are.
Really?
And then what? The other big thing that's happened is it used to be that there was a factory opening on a regular basis, every year, basically. Well, Rossi has been at the winning level for how many years now?
Right.
For fucking ever, right?
Right.
That's the actual
almost
number of years.
Exactly.
Fucking ever. And
plus
so
two.
How many other guys, how many Haydens didn't get the seat because the guy was still there winning?
Exactly.
Right?
Right, because the Repsol is not going to fire Pedrosa, because the Yamaha is not going to fire Rossi. You know, there is that. There's absolutely that.
So I go back to you're trying to raise a good human being. Use motorcycle racing as that tool if you choose to, and be happy with what you get. If your kid grows up to be a great father, and your grandkids grow up to be constructive parts of society, maybe you know what?
Maybe your
grandkid could grow up to be the guy who solves the interracial problems in America.
Maybe
he's the next version of Martin Luther King.
And you say you win.
Dude, I mean, Rossi's a great guy, but he ain't no Martin Luther King. No Gandhi.
You know what?
You know?
On the other hand, he's also not a complete prick.
No, absolutely.
You know? I mean, if you've got to pick a sporting role model, you could do a hell of a lot worse than a guy who seems to enjoy the living hell out of what he does.
I love the fact that our superheroes right now all are nice guys and get along.
Yeah, right?
They genuinely appear to be talking about, dude, how cool was that race? I can't believe you got by me in that freaking mouse hole, but I got your ass back on a straightaway, didn't I?
Sad.
Right? That's so awesome.
How sad and pathetic are the lives of the fans who get off on watching the two dudes yell at each other and argue. God, that's ridiculous. One last thing, and then we'll get to the two-minute warning. I know we've gone way over time. We're going to charge extra for this podcast. Right. Okay. Has the recent failure of Americans at the world level caused problems for the next generation?
No, absolutely not.
Really? So Josh Herron getting his ass handed to him in Moto2 hasn't made it harder for the next guy to come over?
Yeah, you know, that guy, he went to the world level and he got beat by about 20 of the other best guys in the whole world.
Okay.
That makes him such a useless human
being. No, I'm not saying it does. Believe me. Josh Herron in his sleep could outride me. I totally get that, you know?
Yeah, I say that nobody's failure. And first of all, you make it to the world level,
you haven't failed.
It's not failing.
Right.
You know, that shit about first loser, that's a bunch of bullshit, right? No, there's no such thing as first loser.
Right.
The losers is the people who want to do it but don't try.
Okay.
Right?
Got it.
It's far better to dare mighty deeds, to win glorious triumphs, even though checkered by failure, than to take rank with those poor souls who neither suffer much nor enjoy much because they live in the gray twilight that knows not victory nor defeat.
Wow, that was good. Did you just make that up?
I did not make that up.
Damn.
Roosevelt.
It sounds like the sort of thing you would make up, though.
I discovered that one a long time ago. I love crashing and burning. Okay. I learn more when I lose than when I win.
So you're saying
that nobody's failure prevents somebody else from coming
on.
He didn't fail?
No, at the MotoGP level, he did not do what we expected him to do.
I don't give a fuck what you expected him to do.
But has that made it harder for the next American to get a MotoGP ride?
No, those guys are smart enough to look at each person individually.
Okay.
Those guys know. They're all racer dude. That's like saying, I didn't do so well in this race. Do you think John Ulrich is going to not know that sometimes you crash? I mean, come on.
I get it. I also know that it's an incredibly difficult last step on that ladder to make.
Well, it's difficult because your talent is only one small part of it at that scale. It's a part of a huge package, and you got to get along with the team, and you got to match to the sponsor, and you can have everything totally perfect that you can control, and there's no seat that year, or whatever. There's just nothing you can do. So,
okay, 2-minute warning. Ed, last show we talked about British naval toast. Ed, what in the hell were you talking about?
So the British Navy, the Royal Navy, has a lot of traditions.
Okay.
And so they have traditional toasts.
Okay.
And on Sunday, when you raise your cup, you say, absent friends. On Monday, our ships at sea.
Oh, dear God.
On Tuesday, our men. On Wednesday, ourselves, as no one else is likely to concern for us. On Thursday, this is the famous one, bloody wars or sickly seasons, and a quick promotion. Fridays, a willing foe and sea room, which is like a racing toast if there ever was one. I want to have a battle. And Saturday, you've probably heard this before, wives and sweethearts, may they never meet.
Oh, dear God.
Thank you for listening. This has been another Deep Thinking with Michael Gouges and Ed Sorbo.
God.
Aloha.